With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. So get yours with the Rocket Mortgage. Push button, get mortgage. Last night was one of the most gut-wrenching losses in Dodgers franchise history. And yesterday afternoon was one of the most embarrassing losses in Atlanta Braves history. Two gruesome endings for two teams with higher expectations coming into the postseason than that. Joining us to discuss is a former colleague of ours here on CBS Sports Radio, a friend of the DA show, now a member of MLB Radio on Sirius XM, CJ Nitkowski. CJ, good morning.
Good morning, DA.
How you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. An off day for me, taking it easy. I love the off season and the postseason, so I'm good, man.
So I don't know how you felt. You probably have even more compassion than I do for having been a pitcher in Major League Baseball, but what was your emotion watching Clayton Kershaw sit alone on that bench and think about, quote-unquote, what he had just done?
Yeah, it was tough, right? There are certain guys that you'll have some fun with and maybe you'll make fun of and some jokes. And I don't think Clayton Kershaw is near the end. He's just kind of been showing his human side here during the regular season, and he has shown it during the postseason over the course of his career, which I know has been frustrating. There have been times where he looks like he's gotten closer to kind of getting out of that, and it wasn't as bad as David Price prior to 2018, right? David Price was really bad as a starter and got it straightened out that past off season. And of course, they won the World Series, and he brought it up and talked about it, so it obviously bothered him and basically told reporters, you can't hold that over my head anymore. So it gets in guys' heads, I guess, is the point. But Kershaw at times had some good postseason outings. And, you know, so the narrative wasn't as strong as it was, say, with a guy like David Price, but it was still kind of there. And so then you see him struggle in, I don't know if I have the right word to describe how big of a spot that was. But to see him not come through and understand what that means for that team at that moment. Now the game was still tied, right? So they have a chance to win, but he was struggling, with some serious inner turmoil about the way that that whole situation went down. And there's something about when you're great and your Hall of Fame level, the way that he had been throughout his career, where you then go to reach back in a big moment and believe that you can do it and then don't get it done, can be pretty shocking. And I think that we probably saw a little bit of a state of shock for Clayton Kershaw, because when I watch him, I say, okay, I got it. I get it. Bad history. It hasn't been great. It's not going to always, there's no way it's always going to continue like that. He's too good. And it seems like it just does to some consistency. And I felt, yes, compassionate, empathetic, and a little bit bad for him.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the sample size is big. There's 32 postseason outings for Clayton Kershaw, and a 4.45 ERA. Compared to his regular season stats, which is just incredible to look at. But how much of the blame goes to Dave Roberts for even going to Clayton Kershaw? He's a starter. He's not a reliever. And Kershaw hasn't been great in October. Should he have even been in there in the eighth inning?
Yeah, so that's the part that I think is probably, it's worth criticizing. I'm not huge on necessarily going back and looking at pitching change decisions and bullpen management. It's very easy after the fact. But when you're watching that one, and you do know the history, and he has had a couple of nice relief performances in the past. Go back to 2017 when he threw four shutout innings against the Houston Astros with just a couple of hits. Like, he's had his moments where he's come out of the pen and he's done well and he's delivered some pretty big performances. He picked up a save in the postseason back in 2016 at Washington, which was a pretty big moment for him. And so you're not completely afraid of using him. But when you think about the rest of the arms that they had down there, it starts with Kershaw and it continues to go through Joe Kelly and some of those decisions that Dave Roberts made. It's fair to question them, especially when they had Adam Kleric. Adam Kleric is a sidearm lefty that they brought over from Tampa who's been really good. He's been good against good lefties, guys like Soto that he has handled. And to allow Clayton Kershaw to have that moment over Kleric, and I know a lot of people are like, who? What's his name? But he's a guy I actually used to be in the Mets system years ago. I actually played with him at the very end of my career. And so it's cool to see him do well. But he is a guy that's been effective that they ended up staying away from, not going to Maeda in that spot. Has been really good against righties and was good in his outing. The emotion of finishing off that seventh inning for Clayton Kershaw and getting the big strikeout. A lot of times there's a little bit of letdown. Dave Roberts decided to put him back out there, and that proved to be a mistake.
CJ Nitkowski joins us this morning after the crushing end of the Dodgers season last night. Let's go into that Joe Kelly decision. He comes out for the top of the 10th and immediately gets into trouble, walks Eaton, then gives up the double to Rendon. And at this point, you might say, okay, Kelly doesn't have it here, and he stays in not only to see Kendrick, but to give up the grand slam, and then after Kendrick as well. Why do you think that Roberts was so hell-bent on keeping Kelly in there when he clearly didn't have it to start off the inning?
Yeah, it was a really strange outing for him. First of all, this was a guy, go back to last postseason. He was okay during the regular season. He dominated for the Boston Red Sox in the regular season, postseason. He did not walk a hitter the entire postseason last year for the Boston Red Sox. That was a big deal because he is a guy that has had his issues with command. And so he does that going into his free agency and gets himself a really nice contract. And he pitched pretty well for the most part in the second half of the season. And Steve Phillips, former Mets GM, who I do morning shows with on MLB Network Radio, he says, I said, don't you trust Joe Kelly? Now look at this, you know, second half or last few months he's put together. He's like, nope. He said he's always due for the big one, right? The big blow up. It's been kind of his history. I'm like, yeah, but he's got it behind him. Look at last postseason. Look where he is now. And sure enough, a couple of tough outings for him in the postseason. You know, if you go back and you watch his first inning, which was pretty fascinating, you know, Joe Kelly's a 98 to 99 mile an hour fastball guy. He's got a good one. He threw all sliders in his first inning. He did not throw a single fastball in that first inning of work. And it was unusual. I was like, that's kind of strange, right? That was in that ninth inning, and it was great. It was solid. He got it done. But I was like, wow, I wonder what's going on, you know, inside his head. And then also on the other side, as the Washington Nationals see a guy that's 98-99 who refuses to throw his fastball. Now, he did end up throwing fastballs in that next inning, but the ratio was still completely different than what we have seen from him from the regular season. So there may have been a lack of confidence in his fastball. I don't know if anybody asked Dave Roberts about that after the fact. Like, if you get a guy that goes through an entire inning without throwing a fastball or reliever, do you want him going back out there? Do you want him throwing fastballs in a tie game in the 10th inning? Something must be going on with the lack of confidence. And I'm with you. I was shocked that he stayed in there as long as he did, and that even after the home run, he continued to allow him to stay in there, knowing Kenley Jansen was down there, knowing that Adam Kleric was down there, a couple of arms that you could still trust. The whole thing was really fascinating.
After a decade in Major League Baseball, CJ Nitkowski does television for the Texas Rangers and radio for MLB Network Radio. He joins us this morning on the show. Let's shift down to Atlanta. I don't know if there's one person or two people you can blame this on, because this is just an overall meltdown. How can you explain in a winner-take-all being that much of a disaster as the Braves were yesterday?
Yeah, especially for Fulton Avich, right? And he's a guy that's been a pretty good story. You go back to who he was kind of coming through the system and getting to the big leagues, a big arm. Hey, it's a little kind of Noah Syndergaard in him for me, right? That kind of that big guy, big arm, and expectations are really high, and he had struggled to meet them, and he was struggling this year. They sent him down. He comes back, and he looks like a completely different guy. Game two, when he went up against Jack Flaherty, boy, did he deliver in a huge way. I had thought going into that series that once the Braves lost the first one, that they couldn't lose that first one because they were going to see Flaherty versus Fulton Avich in game two, that one heavily favored the Cardinals, and they would be down 2-0 really quick. Didn't happen that way. Fulton Avich delivered seven really strong innings in that game two. His slider was unbelievable. He comes out. Now, I would say if you're trying to figure out a way to explain it, no doubt the command wasn't there. And it's not always about the walks, but the command within the strike zone was not there for him either. He did have the three walks, but he just did not look sharp at all, right? The only out he got was that bunt. And I actually had a start like that where the only out I got was a bunt one time, but it wasn't in an elimination game, so nobody ever talks about it except for me and my wife when she wants to make fun of me. But, you know, it was a tough one, and the stuff wasn't there. The other part, so the thing I guess you can look at too, One of the things about the postseason, obviously you're getting the best teams and more often than not the best lineups, best pitching matchups, but facing a team twice within a matter of 4 or 5 days. There is something to that, right? We saw Verlander struggle. Now, he was on short rest. But, you know, when you get a guy who can actually dominate in two games, you better have top-of-the-rotation kind of stuff, and you probably need to be on full rest. It's not easy to put two really, really strong starts together. Now, this one was a complete disaster, and it wasn't even close to what he did in the first one. But it can be a challenge. You go back, you watch video. Every guy saw him a ton. They probably had some ideas of what they wanted to do, what to look for. Maybe they picked something up in the delivery, but he wasn't fooling anybody, and the command wasn't there, and it was just, unfortunately, a disaster start and the wrong time to have it.
The only team in the National League that could have had home field advantage in the World Series over the Yankees would have been the Dodgers. They're now out. The best contender in the American League is going to a game number 5, burning through their entire rotation to get through the Rays. The Yankees have swept. Is everything coming up bombers right now in the October postseason?
A lot of it is, right? I mean, the idea that, a couple of weeks ago, we were told that they might use only one starter as a traditional starter, that's actually not gone the way they thought, which is a good thing, right? The idea that Tanaka and Severino could actually deliver and you could use them in a usable way and you're not nervous about it, maybe the way they were a couple of weeks ago. So you got that part that's working in their favor, no doubt, having pretty much a healthy squad for the most part, which is something they really hadn't had the whole year. That's really big, but this is probably the biggest one. And regardless of what happens, I mean, I'd love to see the Rays upset. I think it'd be fantastic just because what we saw last night was fun, and we love seeing upsets in our game. If you don't have a horse in the race, I'm a fan. I'm a guy that usually leans toward the team that is not favored, and Kevin Cash is an easy guy to root for, and I like AJ Hinch a ton too. But you know, it's just that whole David Goliath thing that they got going right now in Tampa. But the thing that really does work to the Yankees' advantage, if the Astros win, is that it's Greinke in game 1 and 5. And that's a really nice third starter to have, but his numbers aren't great against the Yankees. He's better than a 5 ERA over the course of his career, and I think that Yankee fans probably love the idea of him having to come into Yankee Stadium for a game 5. So you have that part working as well. You got Justin Verlander coming off a rough one when he tried to pitch on short rest for the first time really ever in his career. If you look the numbers up, you'll see a start where he was on short rest, but it wasn't following a real start. It was actually following just a one-inning outing. So he's never had to pitch on short rest. He did it in that series. They're not going to want to do that again, probably, based on how that went. So you got him coming in maybe, you know, a little bit banged up, a little bit down. Again, if the Astros win, I don't want to get too far ahead, because I think the Rays will be able to put up a fight with Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell and kind of combining those two guys together. But, yes, I think the Yankees, they're not going to say it publicly. I got to believe their fans are pretty happy with the way things are going. They probably still want the Rays if they can get them. But a banged-up Houston Astros club that had to work really hard to get to the championship series is a nice secondary one as well.
CJ Nitkowski joining us this morning on the show. On the way out, when are you a bigger fraud? Deli counter when it comes to the thickness of your sliced turkey, or when you're being asked to taste wine? I love this tweet. We all love this tweet here on the show. This is pretty good. So you feel like a fraud pretty often going out to eat.
I'm sitting there. I was just sitting at the deli counter yesterday getting my sliced turkey. And, you know, she holds that slice in the little plastic sheet of whatever it is, that sheet of plastic. And she's holding up, like, looking for my approval. And I grab it and I eat it. I'm just nodding away. Like, and I'm like, this is so fraudulent. Like, I'm like, no matter, she could have given me like a quarter inch thick piece of turkey. And I still would have been like, yep, that's it. That's the one right there. And I mean, the wine stuff, and I know that, you know, there's folks that know what they're doing and everything else. I do not. I almost hate when I'm asked to taste it.
I know.
Just because I'm so ignorant. It's just not my thing. I love wine, but I don't know a ton about it, really anything about it. And I am going to say yes every single time, regardless. And I wouldn't know. I got people, you know, tweeting back at me, here's what you're looking for. If it smells like this, you don't want it. I'm like, nope, that's already too much for me. Too much work. And I'm just like, gosh, this is so fraudulent. I'm such a turd. I'll just sit there and shake my head. Yep. Oh, that's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
And I would feel so bad sending any of this back. Like, no, sorry, that turkey's not going to work. You're going to have to cut a whole new half pound for me. Or, no, this entire bottle of wine, pour it in the sink right now. Bring me something. I don't have the DNA to be the SOB there to send it back.
Those people exist, unfortunately, in our world.
CJ Nitkowski, MLB Radio, TV voice of the Texas Rangers side as well, joining us here on the show. Always good to catch up, my man. Hopefully we can do this again later on in the month.
Sounds good, DA. Great to catch up with you.
You too. CJ Nitkowski, awesome stuff on last night's gut-wrenching, heart-crushing, soul-breaking Dodgers loss. You got a 3-1 lead in the eighth inning. You're six outs away, and a future Hall of Famer trots to the mound. You're at home to put the finishing touches on, moving to the NLCS for yet another year, and it goes away in two pitches, two swings. And then to lose on the Grand Slam, there is just going to be an entire offseason of thinking about and second-guessing everything that happened in last night's game for the Dodgers and Dodgers fans. And the embarrassment in Atlanta is outrageous. I mean, 10-0 in the first half of the first inning, the top half of the first inning, 10-0. 10-0 after the first three outs yesterday. We'll talk about that and where that ranks all time in Atlanta choke jobs an hour from now. But we'll get back to football here next. Strong words from Mark Schlereth last hour on his old Washington franchise. And now the new interim head coach is changing everything at practice. What's this a symbol of? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
They put the glucose in my blood, Damon. Come on. Those cells are there. You know how hard a battle it is? It's uphill all the time.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The glucose. Sunday, an NFL on CBS doubleheader. Many of you seeing two of the most dynamic young quarterbacks of the game airing it out when Mahomes to the Chiefs welcome Watson to the Texans, followed by the Cowboys visiting the Jets. It all begins with JB and the guys getting you focused for football in the NFL today at noon Eastern, non-Pacific, only on CBS.
CBS is spectacular, yeah!
Brand new episode of the PGP is out, available right now. The permission granted podcast, the show about the show within the show. We delve into the Pete the Body scheduling email controversy. Pete's trying to be a good leader around here, change the culture of the newsroom. Of course, Mraz and his minions are fighting back. We discussed this at length on side A, as well as the only time I can ever remember Andrew Bogusch actually being mad at me. He was really angry at me yesterday. And I really don't get mad at anybody here on the show except for Mraz, and even that fades away pretty quickly. But Bogusch really was mad at me. And I think it's because he was forced to side with Mraz in an argument about science. Also, side B presents an emotional conversation with a true D-alien about how he found the show and about why the show means a lot to him. It's a really cool conversation, so I encourage you guys to listen to the PGP, available every place that podcasts are downloaded. By the way, one last note on last night's baseball game. Is it not amazing the run Utz got in the postseason? I don't know if Utz is in every ballpark or just the L.A. Dodgers ballpark, Dodger Stadium. But, you know, Utz, for everything that Utz brings to the table, it's not a high-end potato chip. And Utz had the banner ads, had the behind-the-home-plate ads, had, I believe, the top of the dugout ads, and I'm like, well, good for Utz. And then, behind the plate, we're getting Cheesy Puffs Utz ads. And I'm going, World Series, postseason, MLB playoffs, big television numbers, big television attention. And we got cheese balls being advertised in the big old plastic container. Mraz, I got to say, a big moment for cheese balls last night.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, I have many connections to the supermarket industry.
Sure.
From what I've been told, it's funny you mentioned this before you even tweeted this, because Utz is very big in the New York ballparks as well. I don't know if you noticed, and I think popping up all over.
I have.
About a year ago, they changed formulas. So it is not, I would say this, I think there's a notion that Utz is kind of the RC Cola of potato chips.
All
right. Right. You know, it's a cheaper version. I don't want to rip off a bunch of other brands, but apparently I think Utz is trying to put itself into an upper echelon of snack.
Oh, really? So, well, they could use more branding because a bunch of cheesy balls in an empty plastic or clear plastic barrel doesn't usually scream quality to you.
No, I understand. It's not even about the quality, but just it's not thought of as like a non-good snack anymore. I think Utz has really upped itself. It's got party mixes. And the quality of chips a little crispier from
is
what I
it,
gather.
Is it?
That's what. When was the last time you had an Utz? I'm just telling you.
Papa Mendo loves Utz. He is
Utz
a hell-bent. Utz guy and has been for a long time. But let's talk about cheesy balls.
Okay.
Cheesy balls is very 1978. Are we still pimping cheesy balls? There's about 19,000 better snacks out there for
first
a game.
First of all, what the heck are you talking about? Everything that goes away comes back again.
I don't know.
I mean, frozen yogurt will be popular again in 2039. Cheesy people, kids specifically, love cheesy balls. They love cheese doodles.
But let me ask you.
I mean, geez, we went to a restaurant that was sponsored by Cheeto.
Cheetos and cheese and Cheetos, Cheez-Its, and they're not cheese balls.
It's basically the same thing.
No.
A cheese ball is a round cheese doodle.
A flaming Cheeto or a cheese doodle is way different than a cheese ball. A cheese doodle has a denser texture. It's a richer cheese. A cheese ball is just like when you stuff in a pillow.
No. It's a little denser than just a packing peanut.
You're
thinking of like the Smart Food white cheddar popcorn. That's a little.
No, I'm not. I know a cheese ball.
I'm telling you.
Cheese ball's got no. It's generic.
Kids love them.
I don't like it.
People are in on the mix, and you put a cheese ball mix with a little pretzel, a little chip like that, people pop that all day.
I just can't believe cheese balls.
They're back, D.A.
Are they?
They are. This is why you have no authority to grade me on snacks on a Friday.
I'm not grading you.
Well, you're making fun of the idea that I'm putting out dips.
I'm letting Moose grade you, and that guy is an honorary fat guy. He deserves to be able to grade you. I'm not grading you.
All right. All I know is if you ask Mark Schlereth right now, well, how does he feel about a cheese ball, I bet he loves them.
No, he's out.
No way. Loves them.
No, he's out.
Stink loves the balls.
He's out.
It's old school. And I think Stink is old school. And not to mention also, how about the party mix, too? Let's talk about that.
Uh-huh.
Party mix is clutch when it comes to parties.
I agree. No, party mix is a little bit of something for everybody. But guess what's in party mix? Cheese doodles, not cheese balls.
But cheese balls are going to start making their way. You watch. You watch how big a Charleston Chew gets in the next 5 years.
No,
what goes up must come down. What goes down must come up.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it. So in the first day at practice, Bill Callahan takes over in Washington, his first day at practice. He changes everything. Okay, how about this? Follow me here. Number one, he brings in refs. He says, I want penalties called. I want this like a real game. Refs. Okay. He says, we're going to run wind sprints. We're going to do conditioning. Really? Okay, why? Oh, is that right? Is that so? And no music. He says, I want to get back to fundamentals. I want to get back to basics. We're going to try to build this team up. Now, I largely think Bill Callahan's a buffoon. Bill Callahan took a really good Raiders franchise and kept driving a stake through its heart in the early 2000s. Bill Callahan landed in Nebraska and decided, I'm going to bring the West Coast offense to the Midwest. They've run the football for 100 years here and done it really effectively and played good defense. I want to throw the football 55 times in the Nebraska wind. This is a great idea and failed miserably. So Callahan has some big misses on his resume. But what does this say about Jay Gruden? Jay Gruden for a franchise that is clearly kind of rudderless and dysfunctional, had music playing at practice, no refs, and out of condition. I wonder if Jay Gruden wasn't checked out. I wonder if Jay Gruden wasn't just mailing it in. I wonder if Jay Gruden wasn't cashing the checks, which happens a lot of the time within that organization. Guys cashing checks. Okay? Guys cashing checks. Frankly, I don't know if any of this matters, but isn't it interesting that on the first day of practice, Bill Callahan goes, let's get rid of the nonsense. Let's get rid of the nonsense because Washington, that organization's been all nonsense forever. Again, I don't know if it makes a hill of beans. I don't know if it makes a difference here. I just think the symbolism's really interesting that Callahan felt, if I'm going to take over, let's get rid of the nonsense. Let's actually make this structured, organized. Let's have guys getting conditioning? It's October 10th. The season's already over for Washington. they're getting into condition now? What does this say about what had happened under Jay Gruden? I think Dan Snyder's the biggest problem, obviously. Snyder is the biggest problem because it precedes, predates Jay Gruden and Shanahan and everybody else that's come over the last couple of years. Robert Griffin, Case Keenum, Alex Smith, DeSean Jackson. Go down the list. I mean, they've had problems for 20 years, so it can't just be the new guys or the last two regimes. It's all of the regimes, and that goes to the top. But Jay Gruden is smoking a J on the sidewalk, hitting on chicks. Jay Gruden is sitting on the sidewalk, hitting on chicks. Doesn't understand, hey, you know, if you're really drunk or really high as the head coach of a multi-billion dollar corporation, you should probably not be in public doing those things. Probably not a great idea to be in public to be photographed. I mean, he's sitting on a sidewalk. What does he expect is going to happen? An NFL head coach is sitting on a sidewalk. I think the thing just, he checked out. They're not in condition. I mean, they're playing music at practice at 0-5. They don't have refs at practice. What's going on there? 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter, DA on CBS. Dixie Landan tweets, what the hell, DA? Yesterday it was a spleen. Today you're saying a cheese ball and a puffy Cheeto are different. You're absolutely wrong there, DA. We're grading you on your takes, and the past 2 days have been Fs. Also, please make cheese balls a drop. I'm saying Cheetos and Cheetos paws are different than cheese balls. It's a different density. It's a different richness of the cheese.
DA, there's two types of Cheetos cheese doodles. There's the puffy and there's the crunchy. Obviously, Cheetos specializes in the crunchy.
What I'm saying.
But they also offer the puffy. The puffy is the same thing as the cheese ball.
Generic puffy cheese ball is not even close.
It's not generic. Utz is not generic. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, an Utz cheese ball is the same as a generic cheese ball. The same one thing I can get into Costco for 9 pounds for 36 cents.
That's ridiculous.
It's true. A cheese ball is a cheese ball.
Quality change.
You don't know what you're talking about. You don't even have kids. Let me ask. Andrew Bogus, do your kids like cheese balls?
Yes. If we let them have them, they would like them.
They would like them.
Yes.
But you don't let them have them.
We don't have those regularly, yes, but they do like them.
Because they're gross.
Sure.
Okay.
We're a cheese doodle family.
See? Boom. That's what I'm talking about.
What's that mean? Bogus is the... He probably won't even let his kids have anything but water. I mean, come on.
Cheese doodle family. He's saying it right now. It's a better product.
Puffy cheese doodles, too, not the crunchy ones.
The puffy cheese doodle is the same as the cheese ball.
No,
How wrong could you be?
Hello, I'm 50 pounds heavier at a minimum than both of you guys.
Doesn't
and
mean
I've grown up around supermarkets my whole life. What the heck? You're picking apples your whole life. He's calling games with Kadri Ismail his whole life. I'm the one going through the riggers down the aisles here. I know what I'm talking about.
Don't act like you're like privy to the Walmart fortune.
No, but look.
I've been around supermarkets my whole life.
No, look, yeah. You know what? John Maru was born into the Giants. I was born into Food Town.
Is that what you were?
I chose not to go down that route.
I'm sorry. What you're doing right now, you're the Dave Roberts of cheese products, okay? You're making all the wrong decisions and wrong calls.
What are you, nuts? Let's have some cheese balls. Let's bring them in.
I'm nuts. You're Utz. Okay, I'm telling you. Generic cheese balls, get them out.
All right. You know? I like a nice firm ball. You know what? I got an idea. I'm going to buy cheese balls, name brand, and generic cheese balls. I'm going to place them in front of you.
Thank you.
Let's do that, and you tell me which one's generic.
Please do.
I will. Don't call my bluff.
I'd like to see this. Heir to the Food Town fortune.
I'm going to do it. Today's a nor'easter. I may not get to the store, but it's going to happen at some point.
When you think Acme, you think Sean Moresh.
When we come back here on the show, your best audio of the day, and that includes Travis Kelce weighing in on pushing his offensive coordinator during the loss on Sunday night. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico, everyone. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all. Geico.com. Sunday morning football comes your way from Clemson, South Carolina on Sunday, beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific. My annual college football road trip takes me to Death Valley at Clemson, where Florida State will take on the Tigers. And I'm very excited for my first trip to Death Valley, very excited for my first trip to Clemson. Got a lot of good stuff on the Nomad bucket list. Got the Esso Club before the game. Got the Smoking Pig the night before. Got some tailgates lined up before the game. Got the fastest 25 seconds in sports when we're into the stadium early. Can't wait. Very excited. And then Sunday morning football going to be from 105.5 The Roar, our wonderful affiliate in Clemson, South Carolina, where actually I was a guest on their shows yesterday. So really excited. Can't wait. And we will be talking to Jeff Bostic as our guest. He is a Super Bowl champion, all three of the Super Bowls in Washington under Joe Gibbs. He was one of the members of the Hogs. And we'll talk to him about all of the things that have been swirling around Washington, coaching-wise, ownership-wise, franchise-wise, this week on Sunday Morning Football. A complete recap of everything that happened Saturday in college football and an analysis of Sunday previewing NFL action. Coming your way from 105.5 The Roar in Clemson on Sunday beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I know our listeners well enough to know I could talk for 2 hours and 59 minutes on Clayton Kershaw's debacle, Dave Roberts' managerial skills, Mike Tomlin losing a locker room, Jay Gruden checking out, the Braves melting down. But if I spoke about 1 minute on cheese balls versus cheesy puffs, that's what everybody would be tweeting me about.
Cheese balls.
And that's exactly what's happening right now. Cheese balls. The Silver Fox tweets, my children, of which I have three, will tell you unequivocally, cheese balls and cheese doodles are not the same. That said, Utz is an industrial bulk standard more than a generic brand. Hashtag junk food professional.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this. Cheese balls.
Lonnie tweets, hey, DA, how about a football food of the week with cheese balls? If you use puffs, I bet DA would call it an F. I agree with Mraz. It's the same thing. Well, Lonnie, that's where you would be wrong.
Oh, okay.
Pete tweets, don't ever compare Utz to generic in anything. You are so far out there, DA, on this one. You are starting to come back in because Utz are awesome.
Puffiness with sodium.
All right, this is cheese on cheese on cheese.
Cheese balls.
This is less about Utz slander and more about Mraz being wrong on cheese balls.
I think we've lost track on whatever the argument is.
Rob tweets, as a Frito-Lay sales rep, Puffs and Cheetos are the same cornmeal, but Cheetos are fried, puffs are blasted with air before being fried.
Chubbo.
Cheese.
Thank you.
So both are fried. Yeah, but that we all knew that one gets puffed with air.
One's air puffed, which makes it completely different.
Again, Cheetos has puffs that are also air puffed.
Robin the 321 just sends me a picture straight from the bingo closet where I work. Tons of Utz cheese balls. Look, advertising's working. Because last night, Utz cheese balls had a big moment on that TBS broadcast.
Cheese balls.
Let's get to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Travis Kelce got into a tiff with his offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, on Sunday night after the Colts beat the Chiefs. In fact, there was some shoving included. Kelce cleared the air.
Cheese balls.
We're good. We've moved on as a team from last game. And you guys got to understand, me and Coach Bieniemy have a very close relationship. I love him. He's helped me out tremendously as a person, as a professional, and I'm sure he'll keep doing that throughout the rest of my career. And just what happened on the sideline, I mean, sometimes football you get a little heated with your brothers or your coaches, and you know, sometimes you just got to rally the family together and let everybody know we're in this together to, you know, win a game. And sure enough, we were able to bring it together there. And I mean, you guys saw me hug him afterwards. I mean, I love that guy. And that'll never change. And I appreciate him always being on my tail to get me going.
Perfect way to pop the balloon. People want to make it out to seem like the Chiefs are pulling apart. Frustration because of the offense. The enemy's not calling the right plays. Kelsey's upset. You build all of this narrative up, and then there's the perfect way for Travis Kelce to pop that balloon. Beautifully done. I love him. He's done a great job for my career. I gave him a hug afterwards. We're all good. We're family. Perfect. I will say, I think that the Chiefs had something happen to them that almost never happens to them, that the offense couldn't get going the entire game. But that's a testament to the Colts D, Frank Reich, the focus of the Indianapolis Colts that entire week. They were great. But let's see how the Chiefs respond, because, you know, they come up against a dynamic offense in Houston and an unbelievable quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and they're going to have to put up points in this game to win. Antonio Brown on his Instagram, because of course...
I'm on Twitter or Facebook right now.
Says, Grandmama, we free, but I don't want to be free no more. Cheese balls.
You guys having a beautiful day. Yeah, you guys follow the Patriots, tell them call me. They still got to pay me, so might as well let me earn it. XFL, never. That was not even in the question.
That's Antonio Brown, who is begging to get his job back in New England, saying they have to pay me anyway, so at least let me earn it. Which is a nice sentiment, but you blew it, bro. You see, you kept wanting do-overs because you were so talented, because everybody was telling you you're so talented, because you were empowered, and you finally don't get a do-over. And now without the do-over, you're out of work. And you stop mattering. And once you stop being in the public limelight and getting all that attention on social media and everybody talking about you, you are left alone with only yourself. And then it's scary because you have to ask yourself, what am I? Who am I? What's my purpose here? And Antonio Brown's figuring that out. Oh, suddenly people stop talking about him, and it's not so fun, is it? Should have thought about that before you sent threatening text messages with you and your boys to the woman who accused you of sexual assault. And finally, Jerry Jones on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas on whether Dak Prescott's future monetarily depends on how he plays week to week.
Cheese balls.
The narrative about his financial as opposed to how he's playing is frankly laughable. It's just not that way. It's too much on both ends of that for the team. It's too much for Dak to equate his performance stats or one loss here these first two or three games. Let me get that real clear.
That sounds like a really tired Jerry Jones, probably still in bed for the night before, which makes me think about those pictures that certainly look like Jerry Jones with those women, and he's like preening all over them and rubbing up on them. It just makes me think like that was last night. He was up kind of late, and now it's this morning, and he's got to do a radio interview.
He's like, let me clear my throat. Let me wipe out my eyes now. There's no truth to those rumors. Who are we talking about again, boy? Honey, you sure smell like cheap perfume and cigarettes. Can I get you some cheese balls?
Cheese balls.
Look, the Cowboys are going to have to pay Dak Prescott. That's the way that this thing is going to go. And Dak is not helping his case out by having a gruesome start of the game the other day against the Packers and not helping himself out with how bad the offense was a couple of weeks ago against the New Orleans Saints. But do I think that Jerry Jones is every single week going, up, three interceptions, that cuts down my price by about $30 million? No, that's not how this negotiation is going to work. Everybody knows that. That is your sound check. squishy liquid tweets. That's a name. Squishy liquid tweets. I had a job change. I couldn't listen to you guys for the last couple of years, but now I can and I've missed you. But by the way, Utz makes the best chips in the country. Zapp's Voodoo Heat. Is this true? I love Zapp's Voodoo Heat, but I thought they were Zapp's. I didn't know they were Utz.
Never heard of them, but if they
are. Oh, they're amazing.
It's like a hot chip, I guess?
Yeah. The Zapp's are great. I thought it was a New Orleans, Louisiana type of potato chip made by a brand down there. They are amazing.
Well, if Utz makes them, now you might have to start changing
yes,
your mind.
Yes, then I would walk this thing back. Yes, absolutely. Those things are unbelievably delicious. I love a good bag of Zapps. Zap, zap. They got a dill pickle one that's delicious. Yeah, I'm in. They're Ridgies. Really nice. But that does not move me off of my cheese ball point. Cheese balls are gross. Generic cheese balls are gross. And the fact that Utz is trying to push them as a higher end or better formula cheese ball, as Mraz is trying to pimp right here, I'm not buying it.
Cheese balls.
When we come back, where does yesterday's Braves choke rank all time in Atlanta sports?
DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.